I walk a straight line, shackled chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
Sallyport,
Inmates Unshackled Edition.
I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
And y'all been looking for us to have some guests. We told y'all at the beginning of our Bloody Angola podcast that we're going to bring you things you couldn't get anywhere else. And we did not disappoint today. So we're going to introduce Mr. Scott Huffman. How are you, sir?
What's going on? Doing great.
Well, Scott, thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. And y'all, this is going to be absolutely the inaugural episode, but I want you to know it's raw and unscripted. The Scott is an amazing person and has an amazing story to tell, and we're going to get into it. But the Inmates Unshackled series will be dropping from time to time.
A
couple times a month under Bloody Angola Sallyport.
Yes.
So this is an addition to your regular weekly Bloody Angola drop that you get, the Bloody Angola Sallyport edition of Bloody Angola will have different topics underneath.
Yes.
This one being the inaugural of
Inmates Unshackled.
Do you guess know what a Sallyport is?
we can tell them. Yeah. A man trap, but why don't you tell them for us?
Yeah.
Well, Sallyport, they come in all different sizes and places, but it's typically the little when you go into a facility, there's a gate, and then you stop, and then there's another gate, and you've got to kind of, I guess, get the stamp of approval to pass through.
Right.
There's also with the ones with the door when you go in, right, and stuff like that.
So the Sallyports, y'all, but it's to control the flow of everything. So you open one gate. Inmates or COs or whoever goes through, the gate shuts behind them, and then they're either searched or pat first, whatever. If you're a CO going in, they might search your lunchbox and pat you down to stop contraband. Or then once you're clear, they open the interior gate. So it's a point of control of access, basically for anything. It could be from a bullpen to a Sallyport outside where vehicles come through with a gun tower over the top.
That's right. And you may be wondering, well, how would Scott know about a Sallyport? So,
yes, this is y'all. You'll
he's love seen a story. Few Sallyports in his time, and he has what I would consider, and I know Woody agrees, an amazing story of
fascinating.
Yeah. So, Scott, we've kind of set you up here, teed you up, and just tell us, tell everybody, the listeners, a little about you and
who you are, where you're from,
and your experience with Sallyports.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Scott Huffman. I'm 37. This month I'll be 38.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I'm married for 8 years, going on nine, and I have four kids, three boys, one girl. I'm from Denham Springs. I grew up here.
Go LP. Jackets.
Go Jackets.
Some parents, Denham Springs.
I graduated high school here in 2003 by the skin of my teeth.
Yeah, me too.
I had a decent childhood. I come from a Christian family, grew up in church. My mom and my biological father separated when I was about 1 year old. My dad was a party animal. He was a drug addict, alcoholic. Right. And I didn't really have a relationship with him growing up. And then when I was allowed, permitted to see him by my mom, it was always chaos, and I was exposed to so much craziness. But I will say my dad's doing okay today. It took him 50 good. Years, but he's doing good.
Shout out to dad. Right?
But no, I my mom and my stepdad, Mike came into my life when I was six, and he was in Desert Storm, and he won me over, which was really a twofold trick for him. He brought me a Nintendo game.
Really?
In exchange that I would sit in front of that TV so he can go hang out with my mom.
The babysitter.
I thought I was the only one that knew that trick. Man,
I call him Stormtrooper.
There you go.
Yeah, I said, old Stormtrooper pulled a trick on me. But Mike, he's been a solid guy in my life forever. And so, you know, like I said, I was raised in a good Christian home. We were, you know, in church Wednesdays and Sundays, and I knew right from wrong, and I was involved in youth and yada yada yada. But I was a chubby kid, and as a result, there was a lot of insecurities, and I acted out, and I had ADHD, and so school
probably before they even diagnosed.
I was just thinking that.
'Cause I had the same shit.
Yeah, well, teachers at the time didn't have as much information,
right.
And this is why I'm such an advocate for my kids.
Right.
Without going into a whole bunch of detail, like you know, I had a lot of behavioral issues.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because I was a bad kid.
Me too.
I couldn't sit still.
Right.
I wanted attention.
Right.
I was class clown.
Right.
And teachers at the time didn't have as much information on ADHD. Mind you, I had just hit the beginning of the ADHD era with medicine. So they sent me to a doctor, and I was like a guinea pig. I've been on every ADHD medicine known to man, and they were trying them and trying them and trying them to see what would work for me.
My issue was they didn't have the title ADHD.
You were just a bad kid.
I was
just a
bad kid.
I was the badass.
Right.
They're gonna whip that ass.
Oh, listen to this. My parents made my teachers a paddle with my name on it. That's back when we get paddled in the class in front of the kids.
Yeah.
So I get it.
Yeah. So long story short, a lot of teachers didn't really know what to do with me. They liked me, but I was a pain in the ass to them. And but I will say that looking back, I do think that some insecurities that I developed was as a result of constantly feeling like I was a bad kid, I was a problem child, just always felt kind of
Black sheep.
And not to say that it was unwarranted, they just didn't know what to do with me. And I'm glad there's more information and more programs out for kids like me.
Yeah.
But anyway, so fast forward to high school, played ball, played football.
You're pretty big, stout fella.
Yeah. And probably, you know, I was hitting puberty.
Right.
Started chasing girls, started going to parties, wanted to hang out with older kids, drinking, and wound up drugging, and quit football my 11th grade year. And like I told you earlier, I flew by the skin of my teeth graduating. Actually, you know Jason St. Pierre?
Yep.
I know the name.
Principal at Walker High?
Okay. Yep.
The only reason I graduated. He will tell you today when he introduces me to people, he says, hey, this is Scott Huffman. He was my Saturday detention foreman. I used to go out and party.
Crew, right?
Yeah, I used to go out and party and then park in the parking lot at the high school, and he would have to wake me up.
Right.
I was hungover, but I ran detention.
Right.
But he was a man that cared. He would call me in his office, check on me, talk to me. He knew my parents were in church, and hey, you know right from wrong. You know, and he's a Christian man. So, I started dabbling in drugs in high school, and that was my release.
Right.
And I was so insecure with myself,
like self-medicating.
Right. And my grades dropped tremendously. The only thing I did good in was this program was a CNA class, Certified Nursing Assistant. I went in because I was going to be the only guy.
I get it.
I was there for women.
She fished in the barrel.
Same reason I took home ec.
Yeah. And so, but oddly enough, I wound up doing great.
Yeah.
I made an A in the class. My nursing teacher was like, Scott, please go be a nurse.
Right.
It's like, you know, I can be a nurse. Mm. So anyways, graduated high school 2003. I was trying to figure out what I was doing. Now, at the time, I started selling drugs.
Right.
And I knew that I needed to do something different with my life. I wound up doing two things. I was enrolled in Delta Community College to go be a nurse. Anyways, long story short, I got a DWI. I wasn't able to do the nursing program because
right,
of it.
Right.
Then I tried to go to the military, which I was supposed to go, and I wound up my girlfriend got pregnant, and the last minute I was so addicted to the streets that I made up an excuse why I couldn't go. Right. I went through MEPS, got my score, right. Was going to be a hospital Marine corpsman, yada yada yada, and I ruined that for myself. Right. I wish I always to this day. I mean, I respect the military, man. I love military people. Right. I think we need to take better care of our military.
Amen.
No veteran should ever be homeless or ill or whatever. Right?
No, so I fully and I always look back. I wish I'd have went to the military.
But you know what? Though, it wasn't your time, bro.
Exactly.
Right.
And shortly after, I'm gonna tell you this. Had I gone to the military the date that I was supposed to go to boot camp, 2 weeks later, I got my door kicked in Baton Rouge on O'Neill Lane. They kicked in my door, caught me with some pounds, and arrested me.
Pounds of?
Weed.
Yeah, but his door is kicked in. I'm assuming you mean by the Men in Black, right? SWAT.
Yeah,
it wasn't the pizza boy.
And I can tell you this, I'll never forget this image, and it dealt with me for a long time. I actually had just went to the hospital the day before. I had a big old staph infection on my knee, so I was on crutches.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Gavin was newly born, and I was changing his diaper. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, and so I hear a thump. I thought Candace, which is Gavin's mom, my oldest boy, thought she fell down upstairs. And as soon as I could say, hey, are you okay? Both the front and the back door, same time. Yeah. These guys come in. They're dressed in army fatigues, right. Rifles, flashlights
right.
on them.
Right.
Get on now. Now, I don't know what made me want to do that, but like I wouldn't give them my kids. So I went to the ground, and I'm holding Gavin. They're like, give them, and they're cursing me like, you piece of shit, da, da, da.
Natural protective instinct.
Yeah, and so I held him, and everything was kind of blurred, but I just kept hearing say, give me the boy, give me the boy. So eventually I gave him to him. God protected my son in that situation, because typically when the police kick in your door, they take your kid.
Mm-hmm.
And she and I were both in the apartment. They let my mom come get him, you know, and I was truly, to this day, I'm thankful for that, because that could have been a whole nother nightmare. Right.
They called us, yes.
Yeah.
I think, number one, I think that was your paternal instinct is why you were holding.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't, I'm going to hold him because you're not going to mess with me. You know, it was more, I've got to protect my kid.
Right.
Period.
And from the old SWAT guy side, you holding the kid, so they have to assume the worst about everybody.
Right.
They don't know if you're holding a weapon underneath.
Yeah.
Obviously, at the point they kicked open your door and you've got pounds of weed in there, you were obviously selling at a pretty high rate.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, if they kicked in the door the day before, I'd have really been screwed.
Yeah. Yeah, this drug selling thing ain't for me. Hello. The first time I buy weed.
Meaning the day before, he got rid of a lot more pounds.
I had just got a load in.
So let me reverse back a little bit. And you know, there's a time you get out of high school, you're thinking about joining the military, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
Shit happened, and that didn't happen for you. But at some point, before that door kicking in, you had went from doing drugs to selling drugs. Give me like the short play-by-play on that. Do you recall, you know, one day you went out and you sold some weed and you're like, shit, I just made some good profit.
I started selling my Concerta, which is an ADHD medicine at school.
Okay.
To this little dude. And I mean, he was paying me like $5 a pill.
So you were acting like you were taking it, but you were really selling it.
Yeah.
And concerted basically is legal methamphetamine.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So what I would do is that, and I would only serve him once a week because I'd have to save up. So I'd put him in my pocket, go put him in a sock in my room so my mom didn't find him. And
this medicine ain't working at all.
Yeah. And so I would save up for a week. And then I would go to school and I would give him like, I don't know, 20, 25, whatever I had for I would take two a day, I think, maybe. And, you know, for a young high school student needing beer money, that was a nice little a contribution. Right. Then when I started smoking weed, you start, you know, your habit develops and you go from smoking, you know, at the time it was swag. So you're smoking little dime bags here and there. And then you're smoking a quarter a week and then a half ounce. Well, for a young man without a whole lot of money at the time, that adds up. So when I started getting an ounce, breaking it down, selling my pot in a sack, this guy's sack, I'm making a couple bucks and I'm smoking free.
Hey, you're an entrepreneur.
Yeah. So I said, well, this makes sense. This is what I need to do in my head. You know, this is the right thing to do.
Right.
So from there, I'm a people person as it is. So whenever people started finding out, well, Scott can get weed, and I'm not going to jack him.
Right.
Unless you're a piece of crap.
Right.
But I'm not going to jack you for the most part. And affordable rates, was a decent drug dealer. And so, you know, to get the word out anyways, people started calling me.
Yeah.
Right. Well, then, remember I said I was insecure? The attention that selling drugs gives you is a whole different addiction. You know, the money, the power, the that was also an addiction, you know, and people don't often talk about that, but people needed me. I liked the title,
right,
and I liked the money,
right,
and I liked doing drugs for free at the time. All that coupled, that's an addiction in and of itself. Not, you know, taking out the substance abuse component of it, the drug dealing, there's a reason why guys go to prison and come back and sell dope again at a large quantity.
Right.
Even though they got busted with six keys or however many, they go back to you like, why?
They're addicted to
the hustle.
The mental power.
There's a danger involved in it. There's money. There's being at the privilege of, you see guys that have businesses and you're like, they play golf or they go hunting for 6 months or whatever. Wow. I wish I could do that. Well, as a drug dealer, you can do that.
Right.
There's no, you don't have a certain time that you got to wake up and be at work.
Right.
Unless you're the guy that's breaking it down in nickel and dime, and then you got to be, you know, on the block. But other than that, if you're bringing in weight, people move when you tell them.
Right.
Hey, it's in. Come get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And so that's a pleasurable lifestyle. And I got addicted to that. And without going into a whole bunch of detail, like, you know, after my door got kicked in, a normal person, whatever the definition of normal, would say, I'm hanging it up here. This is it. I've learned my lesson. I didn't. I cranked it up 10 times.
Right.
And I got further into it. And
this was after your door got kicked in? Okay. Yeah. So your door got kicked in. You obviously took you to jail.
Yeah. So
I made bond.
And, I wound up hiring old Frank Ferreira. That's my boy, Frank the Tank.
I've known Frank for 20 plus years.
Let me tell you something about Frank. Frank looked out for me, man. Yeah. He's a good dude. I'll ride with Frank till the wheels fall off. He took care of me in more ways than one. But so I went to court for probably like a year and a half on the distribution charge, got probation. I still continued to do what I was doing,
it was that feeling that.
Yeah, dude. You know, at the time, kind of the opioid epidemic was popping off, and pain pills and Xanax and stuff were kicking off, and I got into that too, and quantity, and there was a lot of money in it. And at the time, I didn't know about addiction, though. I'm gonna tell you, the kids today have a little bit better. When we started using opiates, when I started using opiates, not only selling but using them, just because I had so many, I didn't know that you could get addicted.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that there was a withdrawal,
a physical addiction.
Right. So when I was taking them here and there, and then I was taking them, you know, on a regular basis, one or two a day, however many. And one day I didn't have them.
and you get
but
sick.
I didn't know that I was dope sick. I just thought right. I was flu.
Right.
So, man, I feel like shit. So I'm riding with my buddy. He says, and I'm telling him, man, I don't feel good. I was describing my symptoms. He's like, when's the last time you took a pill? And I said, yesterday. He's like, here, eat this. Tell me if you feel better.
Yeah.
I did. Went away.
Dope sick.
That's when I knew. I was like, wow. And
yeah, the signal went off in your head at that point.
But by that point, the opiate had already grabbed me.
Right. So no, yeah, I mean, you're going to get sick if you didn't take it.
Yeah, so, you know, what comes with that lifestyle is drugging and hustling and, you know, money and all that stuff. And I got enamored with it. And it took control. Every bad thing, every bad decision that I made that, you know, because I got the distribution charge while on probation. I got, you know, two more DWIs. I got a pistol charge. I got
life was just.
Yeah, I was unmanageable.
Yeah.
Just making one bad decision after the next. And you know how people say, if I would have listened to my mom, mm-hmm. if I would have listened to my mom. Like almost literally every time I've ever been arrested, my mom is right before or up until that point trying to get me to slow down because she knew what was going on. She hated it. And I would always get arrested and go to jail. And so you know, the thing about the justice system is like, and this is a true, and I know that you know this, Woody, like if you've got money, you can buy your way out for so long, right? Even though I was on probation, I was always able to pay enough money to get my hold lifted.
Right.
Or if you've got charges in separate parishes, right. You can kind of work that system. And I did that until I couldn't do that no more.
Yeah.
So while I was on probation, I got the DWIs. I got a pistol charge. I got a second-degree battery charge. I had a fraud by CDS. And then I was detoxing in jail and wound up catching like 12 battery on a correctional officer charges. I don't remember any of it.
Right.
You know, they had me in an isolation cell for 40 days. I was losing my mind.
Right.
All that saying, I guess the judges, rightfully so.
Called up.
I'm not one of these people who says, oh, I was unjustly incarcerated. No, I was an asshole. I went to prison for a reason. And, you know, they got tired of seeing me.
Right.
So then they sent me, and I was still fighting charges. I went in and I didn't know how long I was going to do. I went in thinking that I would be out in a year, and I wound up staying almost 5.
Wow. How old were you at that point?
I was 23 when I went in. Yeah. I didn't say this either. Sometimes I have a hard time talking about this, but I got charged with a hate crime, and I was living in condos on Corporate Boulevard in Baton Rouge. And I went out to the Station, which is a nightclub.
I know it's
been there before. Before you graduated
high school.
So I came home. Now, mind you, I'm going to paint this picture for you just to kind of show you. You know, I was living like I was, like a hoodlum. And I had a Dodge Charger with 24-inch rims on it. This is when Chargers came out.
Cop magnet.
Yeah.
You're getting stopped for day.
Yeah. So look, this is in the height of Lil Boosie's career.
Yeah. Right.
And he's rapping about Chargers. Well, of course I had to go get one. Mm-hmm. Got one, decked it out. So I pull up 2:30 in the morning coming home. And you have a key to get in the gate. This is at the Reserve at Cedar Lodge on Corporate. Mm-hmm. And so I forgot my key, my clicker, whatever. There's a black guy standing outside. And I said, hey, man, I forget what the number was, but I live here. Can you click up? Well, he starts cursing me out.
Yeah.
So at the time, I'm on steroids, drinking. I probably was on a drug. I don't remember. Anyways, long story short, he wound up mouthing off to me. So I got out. And I was wrong. I beat him up. In the midst of the fight, I used a word that I shouldn't have used,
right.
But not in a racial slur with the A on the end, because right. I said it all right, the time. Right. Everybody I mess with, white or black, we all said right. it. Not making it right, just right. painting a picture. So that happened. Whatever, I go home. I get interviewed by, they have a BRPD guy that lives in the condos, right? And he asked me about it. I was on probation, so I was trying to avoid going to jail. So I painted a picture because my little brother, who was 17 at the time, was with me. And he shouldn't have been in the station, but he was in the station. Yeah. he was with me, and we came up a story like, hey, you're 17. You're not going to get in trouble. Right. We'll say dude came at you, da, da, da. So I made up a lie.
Right.
And I said that the dude attacked my little brother, blah, blah, blah. So the cop was okay. So a month later, I'm going about my business, doing my thing, and my mom calls because I had my probation in Livingston Parish. I didn't want them to know where I lived in Baton Rouge. Right. So I live with my mom on paper.
Gotcha.
So my mom calls me and says the detective show up to my house, and they wanted to talk to me about an incident. So I was trying to – I forgot about the situation, actually. Mm-hmm. So she's like – and I thought to myself, instantly, I was like, oh, I'm going to jail. So I tell my mom, I said, Mom, if I come talk to them people, I'm going to jail. She's like, no, they were nice. They just want to talk to you. I said,
yeah.
Hey, I'm going to jail.
They're not
going to
come over and
she said, no, I'm telling you, they just want to talk to you. I said, Mom, listen to me.
I'm going to jail.
I'm on paper.
Right.
I'm going to jail. Right. She's like, please just – so I got as high as I could get. Mm. And I drove from Baton Rouge all the way to my mom's house on Amy Baptist Church Road, parked my little car. And then she drives me across the bridge, Magnolia Beach Bridge, and we meet at the Shell station. And they did exactly what I knew they would. They drew down on me, get out of the car. Da-da. All in front of my mom.
Right.
So then I felt like an extra double piece of shit.
Yeah.
And anyway, so they bring me down. Now, this is where the story gets crazy. They brought me for questioning, and not one time the whole time did I ever think that I was going to be charged with a hate crime. Last thing in the world I would have imagined. And anybody who knew me at that time was like, what?
Right.
So they questioned me. I told them the story that I told y'all a while ago. So I come out that day, it's on Prescott. So they bring me out and there's news channels. I'm like, oh my God. Now, at the time is when the little faux hawk style was in. Mm-hmm. I didn't have it done. I was in a wife beater.
Right.
Anyways.
Played you like the area.
Played me, right. So no, not knowing context and who, whatever, you would see me. I had the little faux hawk, which looks like a mohawk, and the wife beaters. So I didn't, it's still at this time, because I was high too. It didn't all register. Like I still didn't know the magnitude. So boom, they bring me down to East Baton Rouge Parish Prison. Now, you know the dynamics there, yeah. The ratio, right?
Like 90-10%. Or,
yeah.
Yeah.
The black and white ratio there is kind of offset.
Yeah.
So they put me in central booking. I'm done passed out in there, sleeping on a jumper. And mind you, there's like 40 guys in the cell. So this lady's over there hooping and hollering. Now, this time I'm detoxing. Well, I'm coming down.
Right.
And I did not want to be messed with. Didn't want to hear no loud screaming woman. And I think I said, shut the fuck up. Or I said something to her. And she's like, oh, y'all going to let the white boy with the hate crime talk to me like that?
Shit.
And I thought about it. And I said, what did she say?
Oh, white boy with the hate crime.
So then I'm looking around. They're like, and a couple of dudes, oh, you the white boy that's on TV.
Oh.
I'm like, white boy that's on TV. And my first response is, yeah, y'all got the wrong guy.
Right.
Because I didn't know I was charged with hate crime. They didn't tell me that.
Right.
So as the word starts spreading around, now I'm on full alert because I'm about to fight.
Right.
I'm about to fight this guy, that guy, because dudes are talking crazy. And, like, in that parish prison, if you're weak, you're screwed.
Right.
So, I mean, like, as bad as I didn't want to be jumped, there was just nothing that I could do about it, right? The only thing that I got into one little fight in that holding tank, nobody else really messed with me. Now, here is the crazy thing. They finally called me to go to the back like 2 days later. So I sat in central booking for like 3 days. So I'm nervous though. Now you can be as hard as you want to be. I can beat my chest like a king. But there's a certain fear that a man has whenever you go to a line where you know you're about to get just waxed. So weird. Walking down the line, I'm walking down the tier to get to the pod that I'm going in. The news is on. I'm on the news. Everybody in the thing's looking at me. Oh, yeah. And I can just hear the conversation. That's the white boy. And I'm like, crap. So I can see guys. You can see into the – I see guys putting stuff in the laundry sacks, socks swinging.
Rolling it up.
And if for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, like in prison
– weapons.
Especially in the parish prison, you can put three or four bars of Bob Barker soap.
Yeah.
Which are like bricks, and you can really do some. I've seen some guys get tore up like that. Yeah. So I'm just in my head, like planning my death, like, dude, they're going to kill me. But I also, this may sound stupid, but like, I was of the mind, like, you can't check out. Like, don't check off the line, because then you're really screwed.
Right.
Then the word gets around, oh, you're a pussy.
Right.
You're a bitch.
You're weak.
Yeah, you're weak. So, anyways, I wound up going in. The first thing that I did, I just dropped my bag because dudes started coming around me. I said, y'all are going to listen to my side of the story. I said that what they're saying on news isn't right. So I started explaining, well, this is a God thing. So I heard somebody say my name. Say, Scott. And it was a familiar voice, but I couldn't see because my partner's really short. And they got all these guys sitting around. So then I see the head coming through the little crowd and dude start back, and I'm like, he's like, man, it's Trail. So I look at him. This is a guy that I've dealt with on the street. Right. So, and he's like, man, that white boy's the truth. Anybody mess with him, you're gonna have to mess with me. Or I forget, he said something similar to that.
Right.
When I talk about my heart went from my asshole back to where it was supposed to be.
Right.
I was like, thank God. And literally, this is a little guy. Like, he's not some huge. Nobody messed with me for the rest of my time in there.
Yeah. He must have been like the shot caller.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he was, but like he had enough respect where dudes was like, take his word. Like, he's not like that.
Yeah.
So went to court for that for 2 years. Now I was already sitting in prison for the stuff in Livingston.
All the stuff you're on paper for.
Right. And wound up going back. Anyways, long story short, they reduced it to a second degree battery because the story that the guy painted was three different stories. First, he said we pulled up in trucks with rebel flags. Then he said some other stuff, and I'm like, no. I was like, I was driving a Dodge Charger with 24s, with 312s in the back.
Right.
Like, that wasn't how it happened. I shouldn't have said the word that I said because he doesn't know me. He doesn't know how I'm living.
Right.
And to him, he was a Southern University law student.
Right.
Parents are big shots in Shreveport or Bossier or some of that. So I get it. I'm not, I have no ill hate. Like, I made a mistake. I made a bad decision.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I reap the consequences for it. They wanted to give me 30 years.
Woo.
That was a tough pill to swallow because that's originally what I thought I was going into.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to figure out how in the hell am I about to do 30 years in prison? That's why I feel so bad for the guys that I have come on my podcast, because take Sherm, for example, 20 years for marijuana.
Yeah. It's a long stint.
You know, it's going to
be legal everywhere in 5 years anyway.
I know. But anyway, so that's just – so while I was in prison, though, I wound up going to I wound up getting into a fight at
– Which prison did you guys say?
Well, I was up – first it was Livingston, Baton Rouge, Catahoula, Rivers, which is Concordia. When I was in Concordia – on Christmas Day in like 2009 or 2010, a dude, I wound up getting into an altercation. I let a guy borrow my cell phone, and he didn't want to give it back. Well, that's automatic grounds for getting your ass whooped.
So down. You had a cell phone in prison?
Yeah. Yeah. I had one for like a whole year.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, and just me being honest, oftentimes the people who are incarcerated get the brunt end of the stick whenever they find a bunch of phones. But there's only one way to get them in.
Yeah, the CS brand.
CO. Well, you're paying a guy $9 an hour, and you offer him $150 to bring 10 phones in. What you think he's going to do?
Exactly. All day long.
So anyways, yeah, I had a phone for a while, and, you know, I was cautious with it, and I was one of maybe three white guys in a 90-man dorm. So I often, to keep from getting ratted on, would let people use my phone. I was generous with it.
Right.
Well, I've been living in this dorm with this guy for a year, and he come and asked me, hey, man, I want to call my kids, man. You mind if I borrow the phone? I said, here. I didn't even think twice. Here. Let him use it for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I go to get it back. He said, man, go get you something to work with. Now, this is the weekend holiday. All of our knives are buried on the yard.
Right.
I have nothing.
Right.
Nothing but my hand. So I went and got the damn broomstick that, you know, the ones you spin off from the push broom.
Yeah, yeah.
Got that. He's got a damn sword, though. And he's got it wrapped in a towel around his arm like Wolverine.
Right, so he won't drop it.
It was a sharpened down mop ring.
Yeah.
So all I could think of is this guy sticking this thing in me. But, and like I said earlier, you can't back down because your life is miserable after that. I had a lot more years left.
And everybody's watching.
The whole dorm was watching. We sat there for an hour talking shit on the back. They called it I-10. It was just the back aisle. And I kept telling him, I said, listen, you got a knife. You come at me. I said, but if you do, I'm going upside your head. And I was going to try to kill him.
Right.
But, he had a knife. So anyways, nothing happened then. So I said, but he and I can't live together anymore. I'm not going and checking out.
Yeah, shit, you won't go to sleep.
They called for chow an hour later. So I said, I'm planning my attack. So I was the first one in the chow hall, and I'm sitting down. I'm eating my little – this is the good dinner, too. Luckily, he was an idiot and was last in line, so I had enough time to eat my food. I even ate an extra piece of
the holiday meal.
Yeah, right. I even ate an extra piece of chicken and some cranberry sauce.
Yeah.
So he comes in. Now, he's ballsy. He sits with his back facing towards me, and he's at the very front of the chow hall. So I finished my plate, and I just told my partner, I said, I'm out. And I went over there, dumped my plate, and I just teed off on him. And I beat his ass. And they drug me out. They put me in isolation cell. So this is how the guards work. Now, I don't know if he was friends with these guards, but they almost let him back into a cell with me. They tried to mace me when they opened up, and I saw he was coming. I jumped up and went to swinging, and they were threatening to tase and mace me for them letting this guy in my cell. Right. Now, what if he just still had that knife?
If they mace you, then you won't be able to see anyway. He gets to attack you free.
And so like it was just I would tell you,
he might have paid him off.
Yeah, that was a scary situation, because at that point, like, I'm in this lockdown cell and I have no control.
Right.
I don't have any defense other than my hands. But if he's got a knife, what am I gonna do?
Right.
So another God thing. I'm gonna tell you, God protected me throughout my whole incarceration. But they called me at 2 o'clock in the morning. Huffman, pack your shit. I'm like, damn, where am I going? Are you going to state? You going to a state prison? And I was actually like, damn, yes. Everybody wants to go to state prison.
Right.
You're in these satellite camps in this damn gladiator school.
Right.
So I go to Hunts, sat in the Beavers for a couple months, and then I go to Rayburn Correctional.
And so for everybody that doesn't know, they're listening, everybody goes through Hunts.
Yeah.
HRDC. Right, HRDC, and then they'll classify you and ship you wherever they feel fit.
Yeah, so they sent me – I got a funny story with it. They sent me to Rayburn Correctional Center, which is in Angie, Louisiana, Washington Parish. So it was me, probably 14 or 16 black guys, another white guy and like an Asian or Mexican or something like that. So they shackle you to your race. So it's me and Damon, and we're shackled to each other. And I get off the bus at Rayburn. We pull up. There's an old skinny white man with a cowboy hat. Dip. I mean, he's typical what you would envision for the area.
Right.
So he's chewing. So I get about, you know, me and Damon walk out. We're walking. He says, "Hey, white boy." Well, there's only two of us.
Yeah.
So we both look back. He said, "Hey, white boy, you will walk like a white man at Rayburn Correctional or you will be written up." So me and Damon look at each other. We're fucked.
Yeah.
What are we? I mean, like, how? What are we doing that's not? I mean, we're shackled.
Right.
How else am I supposed to walk? Guess he thought my limp was a little too heavy.
Right.
Anyways, so I get in the dorm and I call my mom when I could. And I said, "Mom, they sent me here and they're telling me if I don't walk like a white man, they're going to write me up." She's like, "Well, how are you supposed to walk?" I said, "I'm going to figure it out. I'll let you know." But I tell you, that was the biggest blessing of my life. That place is ran like a college campus, and I got to give a huge shout-out to Warden Wayne Cook and his wife, Andy Cook. She's no longer with us. She passed away from cancer. But they Dr. Wayne Cook. So that dude turned that facility into a college campus. I mean, and I was while I was there, I lived with 10 deaf guys and I learned sign language.
All right.
And they actually made me the interpreter for the prison. So that was my job.
And how long did it take you to learn sign language?
So for me, I picked it up pretty quick, and the reason being I was addicted to it.
Right.
Because I'm ADHD.
Right,
so if I'm diving in, I'm diving in.
All in.
B, I was fully immersed. So Warden Cook wound up, when he saw that I took interest in seeing me hanging around with the deaf guys, he put me in a dormitory with him. So I was immersed 24/7.
It's like living in Mexico City.
Yeah, speaking Spanish. You're going to pick it up.
Right.
So I did, and I became really fluent. And so, you know, like I said, they put me as the interpreter. And so I went wherever they needed me to interpret. I was there. And my biggest reason to learn sign language in the beginning was because I saw the deaf guys, and they weren't really involved in any programs at the time. They weren't going to church. Right. And it's because they didn't have access to the language.
Right.
And the Department of Corrections does a lousy, lousy job of providing communication access to deaf people in prison. Still, to this day.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, and that's for another conversation. Right. But Jimmy LeBlanc don't really care for me because I've had some people on their ass. But anyways, so I learned sign language. Actually, while I was there, I got some credentials for interpreting while I was there that helped me when I came home. But I got a 2-year welding degree.
Sweet.
I was in the associate's degree program through River Parish Community College. I took every self-help program that the prison had to offer.
So you made the best of your time.
Yeah.
You did your time. You didn't let your time.
Well, I had a realization, and I told y'all earlier, I grew up in church, so I knew right from wrong.
Right.
And I went back to church one night when I first got, because they have a whole separate church building there. And I kind of rededicated my life back to God. And I said, you know what? I don't want to live like this no more. You see these guys, they're 60, 70, 80 years old. They've been in and out all their lives.
That's all they're institutionalized, all they know. Right?
And I could just see myself or didn't want to see myself be them. And I said, you know what? All the fun that I thought I had, all the money that I was making, all the things that I held dear to the streets, shit sucks.
It's not a sustainable lifestyle, bro.
No.
Yeah, you're going to hell or jail.
Yeah,
it's a matter of time.
Hell or jail. Right?
So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do this thing differently. So, I plugged into all those educational opportunities and just really focused on changing my life.
Yeah. But, you know, that's so huge, bro, because, most prisons, as you know, or if you don't do what you did, then it's a college in a different way.
Yeah.
It's a finishing school for criminality.
Absolutely.
Right? And so you were smart enough and you did your time and you made the most of it. That's love.
That's why these programs, you know, you'll hear people a lot of times say, well, you know, you can go get a degree for free in prison or you can do this or that in prison. And yes, you know, they do have opportunity there, but this is why, folks, okay? And I'm going to use Scott as a example of this. Let's say hypothetically there he didn't pick up sign language. He did not get his welding certification, all these sort of things. When he got out, okay, because he wasn't in there for life. He knew that. He was in there a long time, but not for life. When he got out, there's only one way he knew to really make money, right. And that was the hustle, right, and selling dope and things like that. Because he had this education behind him, at least he had a shot of something he was good at, and he could apply. And that's why I feel like programs in prison are important. Even if you're a lifer, it gives you some sort of hope.
Hope. That's exactly what I was waiting to say, hope. And so it's love.
Yeah, it really is. So what did you do, Scott, when you got back out? Okay, let's take me through that. You finally get released. Take me through that day.
I got released early, my out date was several years past what I was actually. So while I was in there, there was a law that changed that allowed violent offenders to get 365 days good time. Huh. Prior to that, I didn't have an opportunity to get good time.
And I imagine, you weren't getting written up at yet, right? When you were doing
no towards stuff. The end, no. I mean, you had some guards who despised people who were getting education, right. so they would build cases.
They can't spell education.
Write me up for having two razors, but they sell two razors on the store.
Right.
Too many pins.
Get it.
Like I said, Miss Andy and Mr. Wayne Cook, Dr. Wayne Cook, they did something great, man. That I had participated in all these programs, and I had this. I mean, I had good time out the wazoo. I just couldn't get it. Mm. Well. I was completing a program that had 365 days on it. Miss Andy held off. I think she knew that the law was going to take effect. She held off on submitting it. Submitted it when that law changed. And so one day I'm just going about my business. Dr. Cook calls me in his office and he says, "Hey, so you ready to go home?" I just laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Thank you. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Can't wait. He's like, "Well, go ahead and call somebody." I said, "Well, what are you talking about?" He said, "You go home." He said, "Miss Andy submitted your good time. The law took effect." And, when you're in prison, you don't really get access to know when these laws have passed, right. Retroactivity, all these things. So it happened, and he told me to make a phone call. I was going to say,
I'm a grown man about to cry, right?
No, I did.
Thank you, Jesus.
My little eyes started watering.
Hey,
so I called my grandpa, and we didn't tell my mom. We didn't tell anybody. And Gavin is 8 at this point. I called my grandpa, and he zoomed straight over. So we stopped. Well, I had to stop and get food.
What did you get?
Alabasha. In Covington.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, so good.
I ate a combo plate, dude. It was amazing.
We need to do that. I said, just on that. What's the first thing
I was dreaming about that and fruit.
Really?
You get deprived of fruit for a couple of years, you want fruit. So we stopped at Alabasha. Well, whenever my grandpa got there and I got up front, and they were giving me all my discharge stuff, and I heard that, and that door, I smelled the air. Started weeping like a baby, man. Yeah, I was like,
"There's shame in that."
Got my composure back. We hopped in the car, ate Alabasha, and then we headed to my mom's house in Watson, and knocked on that door, and just so happened she had Gavin at the house.
Really?
Yeah. And so she's, boo-hooing.
I was going to say, more tears.
Gavin's in the back, and he doesn't know I'm there.
Right.
He don't know I'm coming home. And so he hears my mom, I guess, crying and commotion. He comes like, "Hey, can y'all keep it down out there?" So I'm standing at the corner of the hall, and he sees me, but it doesn't register.
Right.
So I see him go back in the room, and he runs back out. And it's like a little movie. If I'd had a camera, dude, we could have made $1 million off the scene. But he's running, jumps my arm, we're crying like babies.
That's love.
So, how I came home.
That's amazing.
The things, like you just said, the fruit, you wouldn't realize how much you miss fruit. How about the way a woman smells?
Perfume. The first thing you said, free air.
Because
I'm going to say something. This side of prison, the air only tastes the same.
No, right? It don't, man. Yeah.
Stale, fluorescent lights.
Whatever. I don't know how you could define it. I'm
taking a shit with one leg out, one leg in.
I did that for months and months. I even, for the first couple weeks, I was still showering with slippers on.
Yeah. Yeah, same case.
My mom was like, you keep putting these wet sandals on my rug.
Right.
You can take a shower without sandals.
It's too slimy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you ain't got to worry about louse or
the
whatever.
The biggest thing was like people coming up and touching me.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing
right.
Like.
Yeah,
I'm,
you're right.
You know,
right.
And then I started
that's
having
a good
to
point. Yeah.
Catch myself because I'm. You get to in prison, everybody knows you don't go up behind people. But if you do, you know, you're just prepared to be smoked in the mouth. But like I had to catch myself from acting like I'm stretching,
right.
You know,
right.
And my wife learned the hard way one time on accident. Bless her little heart. She and Gavin thought it was a great idea to put boxing gloves on and come up behind me and hit me. I didn't know what was going on. There was no warning. And all I could do, I just went back like a bull, boom, and she went to flying. And I felt like, I was like, oh, my God. I thought I freaking injured her. She was breathing. I said, come here, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I said, you can't ever come up behind me like that anymore, though.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, you were acclimated.
Yeah.
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 Wow. And so after that, after you get out and you've got all this sign language stuff, you are – the sign language expert for a lot of governmental entities. And
yeah, I came home and so in order to get certified as a sign language interpreter, you have to have a certain amount of college. So the college that I got in prison helped me to qualify to be able to take the certification test. But so I got certified as a sign language interpreter and I worked as a freelance interpreter for 3 or 4 years. I was running my own, you know, interpreting business for myself, contracting with different agencies, different contracts that I had. And then my friend Katrina, who owns a communications consulting group and Blue Bridge ASL Academy now, which is a daycare for kids birth to five. They have deaf teachers and hearing teachers, and they bring all different students, teach them sign language too.
So.
Anyways. Katrina, I'm gonna charge you for that plug. So she approached me about running a contract for her. They had a FEMA contract after the flood in 2016, and she put me in charge of running 20 or 30 interpreters a day, scheduling, dealing with FEMA. So I did that for 2 years for them. And anyways, probably like 2017 midway, they offered me a staff position and. They made me the director of business development for it's a national interpreting agency. Yeah. So I did that all the way up until last year. And then, but I say all that to say the preparation that I got in prison with education, with the deaf guys, with the credentials I was able to take in there, all that coupled with determination and hope, like y'all talked about, because that's a big thing. You have to have hope that you can make it. And, you know, I was able to turn that situation around and be successful,
right.
You know. And I, a year and a half ago, I left the interpreting field full time to pursue other things. I'm involved in, you know, real estate now and investment properties, and I sell roofs. I still interpret a little bit. I do a contract with the Justice and Accountability Center. But all of the things that I learned in prison helped prepare me to – because I tell you what, I knew that an old guy told me this. He's like, you got to become more marketable than anybody out there because you're going to go up for interviews against men and women who don't have a felony, and you got to show them – why you're qualified, why you're better fit for this position.
Yeah.
So you need to be over-prepared.
Right.
So I, with that mindset, I knew I had to come home and beat everybody to the table or whatever I was doing.
Yeah.
That's just kind of been my mindset.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a fascinating story, right? But go back to when you were slinging and doing your thing. That was your time.
Mm-hmm.
And then God – or whatever deity y'all pray to. I don't care. Mine's Jesus. But Jesus lets you go through those struggles, bro. Mm-hmm. You got locked down in for the, you know, the race charge or whatever. You got sent away. But you did your time. You rededicate your life to God, and he's blessed you for it. And that's just a hell of a story. You know, this, it gives me God bumps right now. I got the goosebumps, and you can't make that up. It's beautiful, bro.
Yeah, it really is, Scott.
This is probably the most powerful interview testimony-wise that I've ever had.
Absolutely. And that's what you're going to get out of Inmates Unshackled.
Yeah.
You know, or stories from actual people who spent time. And I bring that up to bring this up because you got a little podcast yourself, and it's called Penitentiaries to Penthouses, the P2P.
I didn't watch the video part of it, and we were talking earlier in this. I actually listened to two of the episodes so far, and I don't listen to anybody's podcast, but that is fire. Prisons and the criminal mind have always fascinated me, and so props on that, dude. And everybody, give us a shout out. Tell them where they can find you and everything.
So we're on all the platforms: Apple, Spotify, and
YouTube.
YouTube. So on YouTube, it's the P2P podcast. Jim soon here is going to make it to where you can find it easier. Jim has let me know that we suck in the area of marketing ourselves. So Jim's, Jim's about to take.
I did not put it like that.
He's a master. I suck at that too.
No, and so Jim's about to take the reins on the podcast. Season one, Jim was involved, but not in a production standpoint. But we are glad to have him on board now. But basically, the nuts and bolts of the podcast. The media does a great job of when you commit a crime, your face is going to be on the news. You're going to tell everybody how dangerous or heinous your crime is. But there's no follow-up, you know. You see these people, and they go away to prison, but nobody follows up when they come out. So my sole purpose is to give successful, formerly incarcerated people the opportunity sit down, talk about their experience, and then tell the world what they're doing today. And just as an example, like people that come on the podcast, they're business owners, they're running nonprofits, they're working for the mayor in the city of New Orleans. They, are a warden of a prison now.
Right.
I had a guy come on, George King, and Burl Kane is now the superintendent for the Mississippi. Right. Well, he took a lot of those lifers from the seminary. When they come home, he put them to work over there. So a lot of them are chaplains, but George is a warden.
Wow.
How about that?
That's crazy.
Warden George.
Warden George.
You know what I mean? So it's like everybody that I have on has made something of themselves. And the misnomer is that there's only a few of stories like that, but there's thousands. Like I'm connected to a network of formerly incarcerated, successful human beings who are trudging through life like everybody else. And I just want to give them applause and highlight their grit.
I know the criminal mindset, all right? And you're not a criminal mindset anymore. You had it. You changed it.
Right.
But there are people who never get out of it. And they don't – they let their – time do them, and not they don't do their time. They don't do what you did, turn your life around.
They give up.
Right. But maybe not hope. Maybe they don't have anybody on the outside anymore, or the people fell off, whatever it may be. But these stories are powerful. Boy, I got the guy buffs again, and it's love. So we're going to hook up your prison to penthouse.
Penitentiaries to
I'm sorry, penitentiaries. I get
the
names bad.
No, I know.
Wrong anyway. So we're going to share that on everything. We'll share it on Bloody and Gold. But I'm going to share it on Real Life for Crime everywhere. Because actually, this shit is gay.
I really do.
I shouldn't say this because, I mean, I just don't listen to much shit.
Right.
I listen to my own and hers. And then, but that, I was driving. You'd send me the link.
Yep.
And it was the one where you were involved with it.
Well, they were filming them out of here, and I said, what are you going to listen to this?
Right. And
You ever heard, this is a slogan that I like. I didn't coin it, but I like to use it. And, you know, you went from being a dope dealer to a hope dealer.
Oh, I had some. I knew which one it was. I heard it was about the welding shop.
Oh, that was
in
me.
The magazine.
You want me to tell the story?
Yeah. Yeah,
we've told it, but go ahead and tell it. Yeah,
so,
y'all, this is the stuff you're going to get on Penitentiaries to Penthouse, right? All right.
So, and actually, you can catch this on episode
funny
one,
shit.
But
that's,
if you want to re listen to
it. I was listening. I was like, yes.
So, I was in welding school, and, you know, I've been locked up for a long time.
Right.
I hadn't smelt a female's perfume in a long time. Anyways, you're not allowed to have pornography in the institution.
Well, unless you're on death row,
yeah.
Then you can have gay porn.
Yeah.
That was a case. I had a guy actually sue the state and won it. They shook down his cell and found gay porn, and he murdered him and his lover murdered a little boy and left him on Amy River.
Jeez. Yeah,
but go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, anyways, in the welding shop, we kept we call them shot pictures, right. Really just dirty magazine right. pictures. And anyways, you know, we had a system in place. We'd look out for each other. So if the CO was walking around, red light, green light. Well, I missed the call. So I started off with green light. And, you know.
And where were you?
I was in my welding booth with the curtains closed. I wasn't exposed. Right. Anyways, I had put up on the wall, you know, a couple of my favorite pictures or whatever.
He's choking his chicken.
I was like a windmill.
Nowadays, they would call that a spank bank.
Yeah. So, anyways, I'm doing what I'm doing, and I missed the call. And they said Rooftop, which is the guy that was looking out for me, had called red light. I guess I was just dialed in, you know, I was tuned right. in. So I missed the call.
You were in the moment.
Yeah. So, anyways, I hear the curtain open behind me, and then all of a sudden I hear, boy. What are you doing? And I'm thinking in my head, please, Jesus, no. No, 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 no. So then, you know, without turning around and poking anybody's eyes out, right. I just kind of looked behind me, and he's like, back up with your hands behind your back. Now, mind you, right. I hadn't shrunk yet.
Right.
So I'm still there. So they're making me hurry. So I'm trying to put my stuff up, and it's just not working. And so they put my hands behind my back, and then I said, hey, you might not want to touch that hand.
Yeah.
He goes, and he called me a name. I forget what he called me. Right. But anyway, so they walked me down the walk like I was this hardened criminal.
Right.
Now.
Well, you were.
Pun intended.
You were a very hardened criminal.
So, but like, I say, I even talked about this on my podcast. You know, they overlook the, and look. I don't have a problem with homosexuality. And like, hey, do you?
We do you.
But they overlook that component in there, and guys are in relationships, and they're sneaking off, screwing each other everywhere. But a heterosexual male looking at a porno magazine inside of a welding booth.
Everybody's got sex drive in them, right? Yeah. Whatever. How they
well,
do
you
it.
Locked me up for, I mean, 5 years.
Right. And God. You're a young man.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm
strong like bull.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, honestly, they tried to charge me with a 21. For those who don't know what a 21 is, in the Louisiana Department of Correction, you get charged with a 21. It means you're like masturbating in the shower or in your bed or somewhere. Anyways, luckily, again, Warden Cook saved me. He come and got me out of the blocks. He, you know, he felt, I guess, my pain or whatever, and I didn't get in trouble.
Right.
But they got guys that sit in the blocks for months on 21 charges.
Absolutely.
Like that.
That's crazy that's a huge offense like that.
Huge.
You wouldn't think it would be that.
I mean,
it's like, what do you want us to do?
I could see it if you were screwing somebody, but screwing yourself, eh. Yeah.
And you got to have the release. I mean, you're a human being. But it is funny that they have, you know, no sex in prison. And then one of my favorites is the anti-rape policy. What is
it? The rule book.
Prison Rape Elimination Act.
Yeah, it's bad for rape. No shit, my fuckers. But everything's in the book because somebody screwed up something.
That's right. If it's in the rule book, somebody broke that rule at one point.
Y'all,
I didn't know you couldn't do that.
You got to go check it out. You know what? I'm going to start listening to more of it because – I actually like the content, and I really like you, and I appreciate you coming.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, thank you for telling your story.
Yeah.
And you know what? Another props to you, Rod. That's And obviously you've done very well, and you're helping other people and everything else. But you know what? It takes a lot to put yourself out there to tell your story.
Yeah.
And say, hey, you know what? I did all this bad stuff or whatever. But you know what? You're alive to tell it. Man, yep. I thank God for that, because you could have got smoked back in the day. So many, or you could have died in prison so many times. But you got balls enough to stand up and say, hey, you know what? That's who I was. This is who I am. And props to you, bro.
Mm-hmm. Period. Thank you, man.
I appreciate it.
Appreciate y'all having me on.
Woody Everton, that was a good one.
Hey, that's one of my favorites. Still got the goosebumps. So now we're going to close the inaugural
Bloody Angola Sallyport.
Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Wrangler.